It's the Piedmont Arts Podcast. I'm David Borax, and this week we're in Charlotte to learn about a new weekly newsletter called The Charlotte Optimist and its founder, Michael Graff. He's a longtime Charlotte journalist and writer. He launched The Optimist last month to fill what he and his financial backers see as a lack of long-form or magazine-style reporting on the city's people and issues.
I think part of our goal as journalists is to enhance and elevate the conversation, to take it from a place of viral social media posts or viral SEO headlines and bring it to a place where people are actually speaking to each other again.
On this week's Piedmont Arts, Graff talks about his vision for the new venture, promoting the value of writing, and how a conversation with legendary Charlotte banker Hugh McCall set him on his way. Also, Phil Vavra joins us a bit later for Fanfare, his weekly look at what's coming around the Charlotte area, from Charlotte Symphony concerts to jazz to a Sound of Music sing-along at the Carolina Theater. That's all to come here on Piedmont Arts. Michael Graff grew up in Maryland and first came to North Carolina as a student at High Point University. He's been a sports writer, a writer at Our State magazine, the top editor at Charlotte magazine, and a writer and editor-in-chief at Charlotte Agenda. After Axios bought the Agenda 5 years ago, he rose to become its Southern Bureau Chief, overseeing daily newsletters in 7 cities. Graff is now 45 years old with a wife and 2 kids, and he says Axios was a good job. But about 1.5 years ago, something began tugging at him. He wanted to write again, not just daily news, longer stuff. The other day, as we sat on a fire escape in Charlotte's Noda neighborhood, Graff said he began thinking about The Optimist while at Axios.
I wasn't writing much when I was the manager of 7 cities. I had 20 people that I was managing, and I was going to do 1 story on Hugh McCall. I had come across this story about how he was helping a young Gen Z entrepreneur, and I thought it was a fascinating story about, you know, an octogenarian who was helping a Gen Z kid start his business. And I was riding in the car with Hugh while I was working on this story, and he turned around to me and he said, "Michael, have we lost you?" And I said, "What do you mean, Hugh?" And he said, "Are you still writing about Charlotte anymore or not?" I sort of fumbled through an answer. I was like, "Well, yeah, I'm doing this story. Obviously, I still..." But the reality is, as I thought about it, I wasn't. I wasn't writing about Charlotte at all, really. I was managing teams across the South. And it stuck in my head. And I just thought, you know, my second child was born a couple months after that conversation, and I kept thinking about the difference I could make in national media versus local media. And I just thought, I've done all these stories for a lot of publications, I've worked in, you know, a lot of national outlets, but my kids need a community to grow up in, and journalism resources are sort of trickling out of Charlotte. So what if I tried to build something that brought some journalism resources back to Charlotte? And what if I just started it with me doing the types of stories I do? So I talked to Hugh about it again, and I talked to Rick Elias, who was a longtime friend of mine who runs Red Ventures. Rick was really the person who took it from an idea to say, this is a practical thing you can do. We talked about it a long time. We had thought about different business models, whether it was paywalled or subscription or all this, and I said, you know, what if we just did nonprofit? What if we tried to raise money to get me a little bit of runway? And Rick really likes the word runway. He said, yes, I will help you. I will introduce you to some people. You have to go do the fundraising yourself, is how he put it. He said, but I will introduce you to people, and you could tell them what you want to do, and I will help you raise the money to get that runway. And hopefully within 2 or 3 years, you can be flying. So that's the goal. We raised a little money. I have enough to make it through 1 year. I have to figure out a business model, what it looks like, how I'm going to make money from, you know, how the publication itself makes money. And then hopefully it'll fly after a couple of years.
Well, congratulations on starting it. As somebody who made the jump from journalist to entrepreneur as well, it's a tough decision, and we are not necessarily equipped to do that, but I think there are a lot more business models available to us now than there were back when I started.
It is. It's true. You get into it because you try to live by that old mantra, like, hey, if I'm doing something I enjoy, I'll never have to work a day in my life, that old cliche. But then you can't, you know, there's a line between turning passions into work too, I feel like, to some degree.
And the rent is due. And as you know, our occupation is not the big time.
That's right, yeah. And also, as I went around and talked to people about this, they said, you know, we would love to have your writing back in Charlotte. And I said, I would love to bring my writing back to Charlotte, but I have two kids in daycare, and I don't know if you've seen the daycare prices these days. And so I had to make it a profession, not just a project. And that was, you know, that was the challenge I was in for a long time.
So I didn't realize that this was germinating for a year and a half before you actually got rolling here. Your first issue came out here in May, and you're coming out every Sunday. But I want to talk to you about your first essay, which is why I'm launching The Charlotte Optimist. Why are you launching The Charlotte Optimist?
A number of reasons. If you just look at the numbers and think about 25 years ago, what had the number of people that the Charlotte Observer had covering this city, the number of people that the TV outlets had covering this city, just from a sheer numbers perspective, we're down a tremendous amount.
I worked at The Observer back in the heyday. We had more than 300 people in the newsroom.
Exactly. And so now I see the city's media scene as a joint newsroom where we all have to fill in our gaps and do different things. We shouldn't all be showing up to the same damn press conference because we have limited resources. And our city's gotten so much bigger since then, which is crazy. So you had 300 people at a time when the city was about 600,000 people. The city's almost a million now, and The Observer has 50 people or so. So it's a crisis to some degree, I think. And so I not only realized that the number of journalists had changed, but the approach and style to journalism had changed, because publications are still trying to put out reports on a daily basis, whether it is, you know, your newscast at night at 5 and 6, or Axios comes out every morning. So the demand is for the publication to produce a lot of stuff. What that doesn't leave is a lot of time for people to get to know people. And I've watched as, you know, reporters in Charlotte and local media especially have turned conversations into transactions with people, have turned interviews into transactions with people, where it is, if I call you, you give me a quote, I'll put it in my story, and we have a relationship like that. But the kind of work I do, I tend to call people and say, I'm not looking for a soundbite, I'm not looking for a quote, I'm looking for a general understanding of what's happening. I want you to help me understand what's going on. And if there's a dispute, I'll do it with people from both sides of the dispute. And I think part of our goal as journalists is to enhance and elevate the conversation, to take it from a place of viral social media posts or viral SEO headlines and bring it to a place where people are actually speaking to each other again. And I see a lot of point scoring, you know, on social media, whether it's local politicians or sometimes business leaders. And you sometimes see that those social media posts become the basis of news stories. And that's not really an understanding. That's just sharing what somebody has said. It all comes back to my kids. I do have two kids here. I want them to be able to talk to their neighbors without shouting at them on social media. I think we all want that. I don't think this is like I'm unique in this. And I want our media to reflect that, to bring it back to a human level, to have real conversations about topics that matter to people.
So why call it The Charlotte Optimist?
I'm probably going to write this one day, but I don't think being an optimist is something you're born with. And so people like joke with me now. They see me and they're like, oh, that's The Charlotte Optimist. And I should have probably explained this from the beginning. I think optimism is something you have to actively work on. It's the same as gratitude. And those are the two things that I think really level people. No matter what you're going through, if you have gratitude, if you try to find gratitude and you actually seek it out, it takes you out of this woe is me place, right? And so I actively try to find gratitude. And I used to preach this to the staff that I had at Axios, like, hey, no matter what kind of day you're having, like, go find the things that you're grateful for. And optimism is along those same lines. I think optimism is worth fighting for. It's worth it for our own mental health. It's worth it for our community's mental health. it doesn't mean that I'm permanently walking around thinking, oh my God, everything is beautiful. Like, no, it's not quite it. But I think it's something that we should actively work on.
I hear you saying you're not a Pollyanna.
Exactly. Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, you can ask my wife that. Yeah, my wife will tell you, you know, when I look at our bank account sometimes or something, I'm like, what's going on? But I do believe there is something internal. You know, I was the son of a charter fisherman, and no matter how bad his day was the previous day, my dad would wake up in the morning and he would point his boat towards sunrise, and he would think, we might catch a lot of fish today. And I have that same outlook on every day.
He was working hard at being an optimist.
Exactly, yeah.
I hear you. So is this for Charlotte insiders? Is it for newcomers? What's it for?
Yeah, it's definitely for people who are here and invested in the city. There are insiders who are in my audience for sure. But it's definitely for people who want a deeper understanding of the place they live. Most of my audience is people, there are people who've been here for a while. They have some kind of, whether it's family investment, they have a home here, they have their kids going to school here, or they have a business here, or they have some kind of trajectory here that isn't just, I'm going to come here and work a couple of years and leave and go to New York or Washington.
Let me pause for a little background. The Optimist launched May 5th. The newsletter hits your inbox every Sunday night. So far, Graf has quizzed longtime Charlotte developer Johnny Harris and his son Jono about bringing the PGA Golf Championship to Charlotte. He profiled Charlotte social media star Eric Lottery about promoting golf among African Americans and his new golf clothing brand. And he got a scoop, a long interview with Charlotte Police Chief Johnny Jennings, the week after Jennings announced plans to retire and to accept a big legal settlement payout from the city. He talked to local restaurant and business owners Lisa and Andy Castanis about their decision to leave Plaza Midwood, explained why the Pearl, Charlotte's massive new medical school and research campus, is such a big deal, and he took readers on a ride around town with former Bank of America CEO Hugh McCall to mark his 90th birthday. The Optimist has prominent local backers. McCall is one of them. So is Red Ventures CEO Rick Elias. There's Casey Crawford, the former NFL player and Movement mortgage leader, and Michael Marsicano, the former leader of the Charlotte Arts Council and Foundation for the Carolinas. Atrium Health, which is a partner in the new med school development, is also a supporter, along with lots of other people with money from the city's financial services community. Some early stories have focused on them. When you're a community journalist, it's hard to avoid those conflicts, but it also gives you a deeper level of access, says Graf.
I've realized that there are a lot of people in positions in Charlotte who are just looking for somebody who will spend time with them and hear them, not just listen to them, you know? It's like, not just take quotes from them. Johnny Harris, that was a story that many people have told many different ways. And so it was a challenge because I got some emails about that, you know, from longtime Charlatans that were like, do we need another Johnny Harris story? And I'm like, but I got a ton of emails from people that were like, I didn't know all that about Johnny Harris. So it's kind of like children only know the world that as it started their birth year. And I think people come to Charlotte and they only know Charlotte as it started with the year they arrived here. But I also think, you know, helping people understand where the city has been and how it arrived at this point is really important. So that Johnny Harris story, I think, was important at that because I think a ton of people who move here and move to South Park and have no idea that it was a farm before Johnny Harris came along. Have no idea that the Ballantine that they love to hate or hate to love or whatever that they think of Ballantine was built by him.
Yeah, there was a time in Charlotte when we didn't have professional sports teams and we weren't on the national stage like that. These kinds of stories that you're doing are reminding people of that.
I hope so. You know, I've thought about whether I should take these conversations out into the public some, you know, actually record them and give them to the library or something like that, because I really think, you know, I'm talking to people about the story of Charlotte. You know, Charlotte is a place that's always moving forward, so it is inherently an optimistic place, to answer the question that you asked. To see how much forethought was put into just getting a PGA championship here. It took 60 years to make that happen. And I think it helps better inform stories we're talking about now
What other kinds of stories do you envision doing on The Charlotte Optimist?
My favorite stories are interesting people at interesting points in their lives. So, and pivot points in their lives are really key. So, you know, we have a lot of interesting people in Charlotte, but who's going through something where they are changing the way they live or changing the way their business works or changing their family or something like that? And because there's always that tension there for people, and I think you can build a narrative arc around that tension. So it helps to do a story at the right time. Retirement stories are sort of naturally fit into that. That's why I did the Johnny Jennings story. It happened to include a lot of breaking news. It wasn't the intent when I sat down. So to go back, like to just get that interview, which was, quote, requested by a lot of other reporters in town, I never requested the interview. I had met for 3 months with people all around town and had coffee with a lot of people around town. And I had put it out into the world with various people, whether it's communications people or people in government, that said, if these, you know, these are the types of stories I'm looking for, but also if the chief ever wants to sit down, I'm up for it, but like, I'm not requesting it. There's a lot of other news reporters in town who could do that, who are doing a good job chasing that story. But it was out in the world that I'm looking for stories like these. And I wound up with the interview. And I did it on the promise that I would spend time with the person, and that person had to agree to spend a lot of time with me, because I had promised people that it would be different. It wasn't going to be a 20-minute interview where I'm going to go zip, 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 tell me what the public record said, tell me what this said, tell me what that said. I want to know about your life. I want to know how you reached the point where you made this decision to sort of challenge the city on this one topic.
There are a lot of newer publications out there. I guess Axios isn't so new anymore, the former Charlotte Agenda. You got the Charlotte Ledger newsletter, you have podcasts. There are a lot of people who are trying to do something similar to what you're doing. What makes this different, and why should somebody subscribe?
Great question. If people like deeper and more meaningful stories where they know their reporter has spent a lot of time on something, I think they should subscribe. It's also free, so it costs them nothing.
There's a button on your site that says "Become an Optimist." I love that.
Yeah, you can become a member for $5 if you want. And you know, eventually, I do have to turn it into a business. But you know, the goal is this is a nonprofit created by the community for the community, so it's free. You can subscribe if you would like deeper looks at topics that are shaping the city. I think that those other publications you mentioned are doing terrific work for their audiences. Is there a need for the kind of thing Michael Graff does? I think we'll find out after 2 years. I don't know.
So what will success look like?
There are a couple measurements of it. Number one to me is, are people having more engaged conversations, more intellectual conversations? Are they having conversations where they actually understand what's happening before they start spouting stuff off? Is Charlotte moving forward with even if you disagree, can we meet at a place and have a conversation about it? That's sort of the grand vision, is to take these conversations out of the social media gutter. But in the end, success looks like me retiring from this. You know, I don't know if the goal is to like be a giant organization or if it's just to be a one-person organization, but success looks like continued support of this, where people in Charlotte have something that they're proud of in media.
Michael, thank you so much for joining the Piedmont Arts Podcast.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it. This has been great, and great talking to you. I appreciate the time.
Michael Graff is the founder and, for now, the sole writer for the Charlotte Optimist newsletter. You can find out more at charlotteoptimist.com. And now it's time for Fanfare with Phil Vavra, your weekly look ahead at arts and entertainment across the Piedmont. Phil?
Thanks, David. Hot enough for you? You know, they say it's not the heat, it's the humidity. Okay, I'll stop. But we're not going to let a little thing like sticky summer weather keep us from getting out and having some fun, are we? There are concerts, fireworks, and the Von Trapps. So let's turn the fan in fanfare on high and see what's happening. The 2025 CSO Roadshow season of summer sounds winds down this week with just two more free concerts. You can catch the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra at the Energy Explorium at McGuire Nuclear Station in Huntersville on Friday, June 27th. And Village Park in Kannapolis on Saturday the 28th. Both performances begin at 8:30. Acclaimed contemporary jazz guitarist Peter White will be at Middle Sea Jazz in Uptown Charlotte for four performances over two nights, this Friday the 27th, 6:30 and 8:45, and Saturday the 28th, 6:15 and 8:45. Craft cocktails and small plates are served before each show. Fancy. Staying in Uptown, the newly renovated and reopened Carolina Theater has been hosting a variety of events, including screenings of classic movies. The five-time Academy Award-winning 1965 musical The Sound of Music, starring Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer, returns this Saturday the 28th at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. The evening screening is also a sing-along with the Rodgers and Hammerstein soundtrack. I need to practice my yodeling. And there's one more big performance in the 2025 Charlotte Symphony Orchestra Summer Pop Series. Join the CSO for Celebrate America on Sunday, June 29th at Symphony Park as resident conductor Christopher James Lees takes the symphony through an all-American evening of music from Leonard Bernstein, Florence Price, John Williams, James P. Johnson, John Philip Sousa, and more. Gates open at 5 p.m., the Charlotte Bluegrass All-Stars play at 7 p.m., and the CSO goes on at 8:15, with fireworks to wrap it all up. You can read my complete fanfare column and find more summertime fun across the Carolinas on the WDAV events calendar. It's all at WDAV.org. Stay cool. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Phil. That's it for this week's Piedmont Arts. I'm David Borax.